I got?
I'm fucking solo this weekend for the first time in like a year. Giving the boys to my dad.
Damn, really?
Becca's going on a, she's going to see a friend in the cities all weekend. Giving my kids to my dad. I don't know what I'm going to do.
I wouldn't do anything.
I'm probably going to have analysis paralysis. But like, yeah. I have too many options, so I'm just going to sit around and like,
I'd probably come golf for a couple hours.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
You guys want to get a tee time this weekend or what? Leonard's probably open.
Leonard is.
Oh, I was just going to say in the sim, but I suppose.
Yeah, we might be opening
things. Are going to be opening up outside.
Swing them or what? Because
like, that's it, right? Like, that's the snow. We're done. Like, that should
it
be
has it. To be. Well, I mean, I did think that like a month ago, and then we had a blizzard last week.
90 days. So how many fogs did we have after the 90 day from last week?
I'm going to start recording the fogs for you, Ryan.
Do it, because I actually think it's legit. Saturday is supposed to be windy at 60 and windy.
But we still haven't debunked the whole fog and summer situation.
I think it's probably just a thunderstorm.
Yeah, yeah. It's just some sort of precipitation depending on what the... Mm.
Yeah.
We might as well start it at... We'll start the pod at him. He's solo this weekend.
Yeah, why not? Yeah.
Yeah. There's a little live editing for you.
Yeah.
Welcome back.
Found our spot, guys.
Episode No Clue. I don't even know what... Hundreds?
Like, even give...
Are
like
we in just the 200s
get
yet?
The first two numbers right.
Well, it's 180. 177.
No, 191.
183.
Fuck.
Damn, let's fucking go, boys.
Yeah.
We're rolling.
Also, yeah, I feel bad that we kind of cruised past 169. I don't think we said anything about
yeah.
that.
Yeah,
that was sick.
Yeah, because the one throws it all off. When we get to episode 42,000, well, it would be 4,200. No, it'd be 42,069.
Well, 169 is more so just like someone just laying there sleeping.
What? Next to it,
yeah. 169 is king bed.
169 is the cuckold of the 69.
Yeah, pretty much.
Anyway, on that note, welcome back to the Double Bogey Show. We are presented by Nicolet Law, Ryan. Nicolet Law.
They piped that the wrong way.
I'll call the clubhouse. We'll book another 18 for tomorrow.
Okay, they cheated on that. They fluffed their balls.
Yeah, no better time for the breakfast ball than now.
You want a little extra cash in your pocket?
Yeah. If you ever get hurt and you need to know what the fuck's going on. Actually, I want to tell people, like, we're a Midwest predominant podcast.
Yeah.
Dominant.
Emphasis on the dominant.
Dominant. Yeah. We see our viewers. We see you guys in California. We see you guys in Florida. We see you guys in the Carolinas.
Yeah. Yeah. You might have been from here. You might have family ties here.
This ad read isn't for you, but everybody else, it's for you. Because Nicolet Law has offices in Green Bay, Milwaukee, Madison, La Crosse. Okay. Don't get mad at me, Wisconsinites. Wausau?
Wausau.
Yeah.
Wausau.
Wausau, Wisconsin.
Yeah, Wausau.
I know Eau Claire.
Former home of eBay, or East Bay, sorry.
Oh, really? Is that where they were from?
Wausau, Wisconsin.
Good to know. Eau Claire, Hudson, Rice Lake, New Richmond, Superior, and a ton of offices in Minnesota, North Dakota. They're actually getting one in the old stomping grounds, Detroit Lakes.
Let's go.
Sign up there. Getting one here in Fargo.
Pontoon injury.
So they're all over the Midwest. So if you ever get hurt and you got a question, maybe it wasn't your fault you got hurt. Give them a call. They'll help you out. Maybe somebody smacks you in the fucking head with a golf ball and you don't know if they're liable.
Give them a jingle.
Give them a jingle.
Maybe the golf cart flat tire blowout on the cart path, and then it rolls and you hit your head and you know.
Yeah. But only sue the golf course if they're bad people.
Yes. Yeah.
If they're good people, don't sue them.
Yeah. Unless you're being an idiot.
I actually saw on Twitter the other day a sign that said golfers assume all responsibility for injuries, like a sign on a golf course that. And I was like, I don't know if that would hold up in court.
Yeah.
So
anyone can put that up.
Yeah. Anyone can.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Maybe talk to Russ about that one in the future.
So if you got questions, give him a jingle or check him out. NicoletLaw.com.
We just need to backtrack a week. So again, swing revelation.
Oh, yeah.
And we kind of had to do an update because we put the post out about it. And
it was pretty.
Why is it always me who has?
No.
No, I thought, it was good.
No, it was good. It was good.
Yeah. But right away it started. You were getting ripped. I was like, oh, no, I feel bad for putting this out. But then
you shouldn't feel bad, though, because I feel like it happens weekly.
Yeah. But I was like, when people first started commenting, there was not a single positive one. And I felt bad because I laughed at you and everyone was ripping on you. And then the supporters did trickle in. So I think it is, it's pretty 50-50.
Which, knowing the way the
60-40 in my favor.
Knowing the way the algorithm works, it went to our followers first and then everybody else who doesn't follow us. So all the bad comments first are from the listeners. Yeah. So you're welcome.
Okay, well, I think part of it too was my delivery of it, it couldn't have been any better. It couldn't have been any worse because it's quite literally what it is. You take a practice swing, you step up to a ball, and then you just replicate that practice. Again, the practice swing, your practice swing is never what your real swing is.
Mm-hmm. No.
A lot of people in the comments were like, yeah, my real swing, I just feel more tight and I don't feel as loose. The practice swing is so loose. If you just trust the practice swing and quite literally do that with a ball at the face of your club. Mm-hmm. I golfed around last week and it was on auto fixed putt.
Yes, you get it in a circle.
So yeah,
depending, it's a one or
goes,
a two putt.
It goes 10 and then 20.
Yeah, 10 feet circle.
Inside 10 is one putt. Outside 10 is a two putt. Outside of 20, you got to putt it actually. I'm pretty sure. Or on the green, outside 20, it might be a three putt.
Yeah, it's a three putt.
Okay, so also the thing with auto fixed putt on the sim, this is, I couldn't believe this, but if you're on the green, but not within the big circle,
mm-hmm.
it's an automatic three putt.
Yeah.
So on a par three.
Yeah, yeah. So that's the 20. Outside of 20,
yeah, it makes so like you three putt. The big ass circle that says auto fixed putt around it.
Mm-hmm.
I hit the green on a par three outside of that circle and I automatically bogeyed it.
Yeah,
that's
like
that,
it doesn't even give you a chance. So I mean, there's like, so that hole right there, that's a bogey. I was 5 under.
Oh shit.
5 under through 18 holes, and I think I had 3 bogeys and probably like, I don't know, well, let's do the math, 8 birdies.
Yeah,
it was unbelievable. Again, just sticking to the practice swing, take a practice swing, replicate that with the ball in front of my club. And I was hitting fairways. I was hitting greens. I eagled. Number two was a par five. Eagled the par five. 190 out. Fucking stuck it right in the
hell table. Yeah.
Nice.
Hell yeah.
So I'm not yet going to say the proof is in the pudding. Because again, it could just be this one wild instance where I just played well.
Yep.
But I'm going to continue to do it and, you know, see how it goes.
Hey, every good scientist doesn't take their first experiment and call it fact.
Yeah, no, 100%.
They have to confirm. They have to corroborate all evidence.
Yeah. Yep,
you got the scientific method going on.
Yep. And no, it wasn't fucking chip and putt. It was some course, Headwaters course in Michigan or something. Tight fairways. Mm-hmm. Jade played it.
Nice.
Yeah, so I was kind of pumped about it.
Keep playing that well, I'm going to lower your handicap for league.
Well, we got to get that league going too, by the way.
Yeah, I don't think probably anyone wants to play it now because it's nice outside.
Yeah, that's everyone true. Would rather just play golf outside.
Mr. Window.
So yeah, that's...
I know it's still not for... I have terrible news to share. It's not terrible news because it's like... Whatever. Anyway, I'm the best man in a wedding that is groom supper Thursday, wedding Friday during the Masters.
Oh... Well, I mean, it's only the Friday round. That's kind of fine. But
yeah,
still.
But the Thursday round, too.
Yeah, that's true. The Thursday round is...
And, like, I'm not guest. I am best man. So I have to be there to help. I'm more than happy to do that. So that's why it's not terrible news, but it's just conflicting news.
Yeah.
I'm going to have to be that guy at the groom supper with his fucking phone on his lap.
Man, I just put an AirPod in.
Yeah, that would look bad, though. I got to be like sitting at the front table next to the groom. I got an AirPod.
No, like, okay. So the groom supper, that's evening. Like you'll maybe be doing some setup early on, but then it's just.
Well, we got the rehearsal as well. And
yeah.
Well, anything outside of that, you know, if you think that your actual commitments are probably, let's say 3 hours on Thursday.
Yep. Thursday's good. But the tee time, they tee off at like what? 9 o'clock.
Mm hmm. Yeah, if not earlier, because
which actually field. maybe this is a good thing. I'll be able to watch most of the first day because I took Thursday and Friday off of work.
Okay,
so I'll be able to watch the Masters all the way up until I'm needed to help with the wedding, which I do believe there will be some setup night before, day before.
Sure.
Plus, if you luck out, you know how like the groom's room or whatever they call it, you might have a TV in there. You maybe just cast right to it.
I am the only sports guy.
I was gonna say I don't know if anyone else.
Well, there's one. There's a college golfer that's in the groom's party.
Okay.
So me and him will want to watch.
That's the other thing too. If you if you have to watch a sporting event at a wedding, you better find somebody else to get invested with you. That way you can like go down together.
I mean, to be honest though, if the groom doesn't want to watch the Masters, we will not be watching the Masters. I'm not going to force it on him at his own wedding.
I probably wouldn't either. I mean, that it's more so, it's kind of like a bachelor party. It's like whatever you want to do, whatever you want to watch, whatever it's, you know, it's about them. It's their day.
I don't want to be the shitty friend that is the entire groom's party is hanging out, drinking beers, doing whatever before the wedding, and I'm in the corner on my phone watching the Masters.
Again, throw an AP in, throw one AP in. I feel like it's a huge trend with younger kids these days just to have the one AirPod in.
Why?
I
don't have AirPods. I have the little Beats.
Okay.
Beats version of AirPods. Sure, yeah. Same fucking thing. If I have one in, it tweaks me out.
It is odd.
I don't like it one bit. Because all good headphones now are equalized, especially if you're watching something.
Yep.
It's not mono. It's all stereo. So certain things go in the right ear. Certain things go in the left ear to make the sound experience more encompassing, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it sounds way off if you only have one earbud in.
Just having the one.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know what it is, but you're taking important business calls. You still kind of, you're on the clock next Thursday. Well, right? You could just say you're on the clock.
Maybe that's the move. If you're a solo and you get stuck with a threesome and you're not really vibing with the guys, maybe you just pop in one.
Throw an AP in there.
Pop in an AP. DBS.
Did I ever tell you guys the morning I tried to play with headphones in?
I think you might have, but I forgot. It's been a while.
Yeah, I hated it. Really? Not a fan of the headphones in on the course. I was solo round one morning. Osgood got out real early, had the headphones in. I played half a hole with them in. I'm like, this sucks. So then I just had it on a speaker. Had the Apple Watch would pause whatever I was listening to during the shot because I was listening to a podcast.
Mm-hmm. Double Bogey Show?
No.
Okay.
Don't listen to my own podcasts.
You should. I mean, it is a good podcast. You should listen.
I hear enough of our voices during the week, especially when editing clips. And then, holy shit.
I get my voice way too much.
I get sick of us real fast.
Between Ryan singing all the time and...
It's one thing to live it, but then to have to re-listen to the same thing over and over. It's good once.
It's good. Yep. First time's great.
I will say the golf course is one place you should never have headphones or AirPods in.
See, and I think that would be a hot take in the golf world because I think people fucking love it. I don't. I'm with you 100%.
Yeah,
it's distracting and it feels awkward.
Well, so also this is probably just obvious to a lot of people, but you're not allowed to allowed to listen to anything during like a legit golf competition. Mm-hmm. Like at Pine to Palm, you can't have headphones in because there's something with the rhythm, like the rhythm of a song could like help you in the rhythm of your golf swing.
Oh, really?
So it can like create an extra advantage for somebody.
That's why you can't have headphones on when you run races either, because you can use it to pace yourself.
Interesting.
You know the length of a song, you know how
like
far
a college track meet or something.
Yep,
like
even
that.
Even marathons, I don't think you're allowed to have.
Oh yeah, you are. Like Fargo, yeah, for sure.
Really?
Oh yeah.
And it still counts?
Oh yeah.
Huh.
Yeah. I wore headphones during the half marathon.
Mm. Okay.
Years ago. College sanctioned sporting events, I don't know if you'd be allowed
to. I've never seen any guy wear them at.
So we had a, I don't know if this is a good story or a really bad story. So I was a sprinter and a thrower. So I threw disc and I ran sprints in high school track. And we have one meet a year where the coach is like, your events don't matter. You guys can do whatever you want. You can be in whatever event you want to. And so I signed up for the mile.
Fuck yeah.
Nice.
And I wanted to run the 200 still because it was my best race. So I still ran the 200. I ran the 200 and I got second, ran a really good time. And the next race after that is the mile. So then I run the mile and these guys are kicking my ass.
Oh yeah.
And I realize... So I'm four laps around the track, right? I'm on the second, like the third lap, and people are running with me and cheering me on. I'm like, what is going on here? This is weird. And I get to the final lap. I had been lapped by the guys that got first and second already at this point.
Damn. And they were still running?
No, they'd finished. Oh, they lapped me. So I'm on the last 100 meters of the final lap, and the crowd stands up and cheers for me. They thought I was handicapped.
Oh,
because of the kids running with me. And I was so far behind. And my coach came up to me like, on the third lap or something, like when I rounded a corner, he's like, if you're going to run this race, run it seriously. Cause I was being shithead about it. Like I wasn't running hard. I was
right after the 200. Yeah. Yep. What are you going to do?
And I crossed the finish line just dead last. Right. And the people are like, didn't you just run the 200 really well? I was like, yeah, that was me. And then I realized why everyone was standing and cheering. And I felt super bad because I wasn't wearing distance spikes. I was just wearing my regular tennis shoes. And then I almost got DQ'd because people ran with me. Oh, and you're not allowed to use a person to help you pace.
Damn. They had they had
it was super embarrassing. And I was like, ah, damn, I'm sorry, coach.
Well, because usually I should have ran if you trip or something like that, you know, someone falls during the race and, you know, they're usually. Yeah.
I just ran it to be a shithead. And I was like, I'm not going to run this hard. I don't give a fuck about the mile. Yeah. I just did it because, like, I think a friend dared me to or something.
You didn't have to do like a senior mile or anything like that. Yeah.
No, it was embarrassing, but the whole, I almost got DQ'd because that reminded me of it.
Okay.
So,
there was no handicap there.
And maybe should have had headphones in.
Yeah. Maybe should have had headphones
in. I would have been better if I got DQ'd, then that time would have been stricken from the record and it'd have been like, it never happened.
Yeah.
Yeah. I just, I just think, like, you're out on the golf course to just enjoy nature. There's something about being out in nature where if you have other, like, impeding sounds, you can't enjoy it as much.
Yeah.
So going, especially a solo round, like, talk about the ultimate zen place. Mm-hmm. You can't have fucking Lil Wayne blast in your ears while you're trying to hear the birds chirp and the ducks quack and the geese honk.
Yeah.
And the sound of the ball off the club too. That's like, I mean, that's also therapeutic in itself.
That is true.
I can't wait for some golf guru that thinks that they're like the sage of golf tell us to listen to nature sounds in our headphones.
I was going to just say, like, if I'm playing at like Mapleton where you got to play right along the interstate, like that might be a hole fair. To pop in an AP but, and listen to and get a hold of whatever soundtrack they're using at Augusta. Just pump that through the AirPods.
If I met somebody that was playing nature sounds in their headphones at a golf course, I would throw their AirPods in the pond.
Yeah, I would love to. People who do wear them, I would love to hear what's in there. Like, are they listening to an audiobook? Maybe like it's the only time that they have to listen to like their favorite podcast or something like that. But again, I think just putting that on the speaker on low volume, so when you're in the cart, you know, if you're playing solo especially, you're going to drive the cart up right next to your ball.
Yeah,
you're still going to be able to hear it.
I can honestly tell you I will never play solo with a cart. I'm walking every time. I'm alone.
It is therapeutic. Yeah,
sometimes the one time I did, I honestly wanted to just see how fast I could do it, how fast I could play 18 holes.
Yeah,
because I had the second tee time of the day. And had I not gotten held up by the group in front of me on a couple holes, I think I could have played 18 holes in like an hour and a half.
That would have been sweet. Set a record.
Because again, I get my distance. I know my club. I hit my shot and I move to the next one. There's no questions of like, hey, you know, should I take a mulligan? Of course I'm going to take a mulligan. I don't need to ask anybody.
Am I going to go look for that first ball? No.
Yeah, I'm second just going to drop it right here. It's there's just something about it.
Yeah, I'm with that.
So,
speaking of things, that's a terrible
thing. General.
Speaking of things, in general. Oh, we got to do our final episodes, full swing.
Mm-hmm.
Jake and I were talking before this. I think you're going to be very surprised. I was extremely underwhelmed.
I was like, at the end of it, I remember at the end of season one, I was like, holy shit, I can't wait for there to be a season two.
What was the end of season one again?
I don't remember specifically, but I just remember being really excited.
The end of season one was the live dramas, like, Brooks teasing that he's going to the live, like it just all came to a crest. It's like the live was announced, players started moving over to it, and then Brooks, who was one of the main characters of season one, so the reporter asked him, like, what do you think about going to the live? And he's like, well, I don't know.
Oh yeah,
I guess we'll see.
Yep. Yeah, kind of left you the cliffhanger. Yep. Whereas season two just left you with the winner of the Ryder Cup.
Yeah, and honestly, the Ryder Cup, I thought that it didn't give me any inside drama that we didn't already know.
Yeah, it also sucked that I kind of knew the ending of it already too.
Like, we knew how last year's, like, season one shook out. We knew how it was all gonna end because we'd all watched it unfold. And so that's the same thing with season two, but season one gave us so much more extra that we didn't know, that I think that's why it was way better than season two.
Do you think it's because Liv was so fresh and like you didn't know what was gonna happen next? Like,
but we
needed a season two because you didn't know that, you know, John Rahm was going to leave for LIV or all these other players or the merger or anything like that. Like,
But we were already like 6 months removed from everything that happened in season one when we watched it. So we knew Brooks was going to go to the LIV.
Yeah. And it was also kind of they were not necessarily doing a cliffhanger of what's going to happen, but it was a cliffhanger of how are we going to cover the next
six months. Exactly.
Whereas now I feel like it's like Ryder Cup period.
Well,
I felt like there was kind of a period at the end.
It's like we got more info on Brooks's decision to go to the LIV in season one. We didn't get any extra info. The coolest thing I thought the whole season two gave us was the decision-making process of creating the teams. When it got to the that was the truest inside look behind the scenes of how things happened last year that I had no clue about. I knew Keegan Bradley didn't get picked, but I didn't know all of the drama behind it and that he really wanted to get in. Like, I didn't realize that he was playing so much better than JT. Like, all that stuff. That's the stuff I want. And we didn't get a ton of it. Like,
I was disappointed of once we saw that Keegan Bradley got the phone call, said that he wasn't going to be on the Ryder Cup team. There was nothing after that.
Well, they did show one scene of him still cheering on.
Yeah, it was just the one scene.
Though. Yeah.
Did it even get like his thoughts like right after the call?
A little bit. It's just his kid hugging him, clearly distraught and disappointed and upset.
But no like sit down interview of like, how are you feeling?
No. Nope.
That's what I was kind of bummed out about. Because that was a big storyline.
Yeah. And I know that it's like, I mean, obviously it's the timing of when they filmed it and when they had to release it. But if I were to go back and redo all of this whole season or whatever, Keegan Bradley not making the Ryder Cup team would have been episode one or episode two for me. Yeah. And then show what happens to him after that. Right. So like the big climax of the entire season was what I would have chosen to be my point of conflict at the beginning of the story.
Yeah.
You know, I felt like it was kind of like, that's the end of it. Okay. Have fun.
Yeah. You guys read into it a lot more than I do.
The season as a whole up until episode six, I it was fine. I enjoyed it. Four and five were the best episodes the most interesting. I liked seeing Joel Damon, but the Ryder Cup was, I think, the biggest letdown. Because I thought,
what more did you want from it?
I thought for sure they would dive in more to the drama that happened on the green with Joe Baklava. That's the thing you put on your face, and then the altercation in the parking lot. We just got nothing extra on it. We got a little bit of like John Rahm mic'd up, or not John Rahm. Shane Lowry mic'd up in that altercation. But really, there was just no expanding on it whatsoever. We got like the golf writers to talk about it, but none of the...
Like you wanted to hear what was said?
I wanted to hear what Rory's thoughts were on it. Like, I got mixed up. I got pissed at the wrong caddy in the parking lot because it was JT's caddy that he barked at in the parking lot, which is the wrong one.
No, it was the correct one.
No, it was a different caddy he yelled at in the parking lot than the one that was being a shithead on the... Nope. Yeah, it was.
Nope, it wasn't.
Look it up.
Nope.
It's wrong.
Joe Lacava had his hat. He's a big bald-headed guy.
Yeah, and he was the one that was being a shithead on the green, and then Rory barked at the wrong guy in the parking lot. It was somebody else's caddy. Yeah.
Nope.
Yep.
Jake, we need confirmation on this.
I'm positive.
It's me too. So, Jake, you are... Yeah, this is deciding vote here.
Yeah, I'm trying to get it right now. Joe Lacava, Saturday's fiery evening. No, it was the right one. Yeah, it's Cantley's caddy.
Yeah, Joe Lacava is Cantley's caddy.
Who was celebrating wildly in the middle of the green, much to the displeasure and anger of McIlroy, who still had a putt to tie the match.
Yeah, and then in the parking lot.
In the parking lot, it's also a bald-headed guy. Because he doesn't have a hat.
Oh, and he confronted Bones.
Yeah,
in the parking lot. So it was the wrong one.
See?
So he confronted.
Yeah, he got confused. He yelled at the wrong guy.
He was yelling at Bones, which is disrespectful, with his wife standing a foot from him, saying that words that shouldn't be said. Now I'm on Rory's side too, because I love Rory, but when you're something and you want to fight, you're going to say things. Is that disrespectful? Yeah, it seems like he got the wrong guy on accident.
Yeah.
I'm going to even see if Bones and Lacava look similar at all to each other.
They both look like caddies.
Yeah, they both. Yeah, they're both bald caddies.
So okay, Jim Bones McKay. Why was he yelling at him?
I don't know. I think he said something to him, and then I think he met. I'm pretty sure he thought it was Laclava.
Yeah.
How do you just mix that up? You see these guys every week.
Heat of the moment. Rory is fucking fired up.
Okay, well, that doesn't make any sense to me then.
Right. That's what I wanted him to go in on, and they didn't. I was like, I want to know, like, did Rory feel shitty that he yelled at the wrong guy? Like, what did that guy think? He was just probably just made a comment to Rory. Also, I wanted
weird.
To go, like, they did one tiny little clip of Ricky talking about conceding the putt. I wanted more on that too. Like, I wanted other people's opinions. Like, I knew
that was a wild putt to concede,
dude.
And I know it was huge drama like after the Ryder Cup is over, but people, I think, now have forgotten about that, and that brought it back to light. That was insane to just give someone a putt to win the entire
Ryder Cup. It was like a 5-footer,
and they've missed those putts before. Mm-hmm.
Okay, five might be a little exaggeration. Three at the shortest.
And I get it. The percentage of making that putt is probably like 89-90% mm-hmm. for those guys. But mm-hmm. it doesn't matter because it's the moment that they're in.
Well, and like
that is the deciding factor.
And Fleetwood is a great golfer. Don't get me wrong. But it's not like he's known as being like Mr. Iceman, ice in my veins.
Yeah, he's really not. He hasn't won in a long time.
Right.
Or like, he's maybe won once over the course of however many years. So he hasn't really been in those pressure moments lately.
Yeah, and it's not like he's got the reputation that Scottie Scheffler does for making every putt he needs to make.
Right.
Right. Like, he's a great golfer. Don't get me wrong.
Scottie Scheffler is actually he was a dog shit putter before he changed his putter.
Yes. But that man is on a fucking tear right now.
Yeah, he is. Yeah, he is.
Scottie cannot be stopped. He is the real fear of the beard.
Forget
James Harden. Scotty grew a beard and he became unstoppable.
Okay, got you. Here's your answer, boys. Figured it out.
Let's go.
Okay, I'm getting more into the details than
the show did.
Than the show did.
Yeah.
Okay. So McIlroy and Laclava was on the green celebrating mm-hmm. and waving his hat to the crowd.
Watching that on Full Swing. Laclava was stood there way too fucking long.
He's being a jackass.
Yep, for sure.
Absolutely.
I am not on his side.
And Shane Lowry, like, I think is he Irish?
I don't know what he is.
Regardless, he's an Englishman, and he'll throw hands. He's the guy, like, in a bar that has a couple too many beers and will fight anybody.
Yep.
Yeah, absolutely. Like. So, Laclava waving his hat, totally in the wrong. Apparently, after that hole, because it was on the 18th, Rory told him a few words, and then that was it, right? Then on the way home back to the hotel, Bones heard about the whole situation and came to Lacava's side, was on the same side as Laclava because they were conversing about it. Rory and Bones were conversing about what had happened on the 18th. Mm. And then obviously Rory was still upset about it. And so then obviously those two got into a little bit of a barking match with each other.
Interesting.
Which would have been good to know.
Yeah.
Because I was still confused. Like, he's not yelling at the caddy that did it. He's yelling at a different guy. Why?
Yeah.
I never, because Bones and Laclava look similar.
They do,
Both have bald heads.
Yep.
Correct?
Both bald, both, you know, of average stature, you know, whatever.
Interesting.
So that's why, it's a little confusing. But yeah, that's exactly why it happened like that.
Am I an idiot for not knowing that?
I don't think so. I think, they look similar enough.
Okay.
I knew that when it happened that it was
Laclava in the parking lot.
Mm-mm. Laclava had already, gone. He just wasn't there, I guess, is all I know. But yeah, Bones was there. And then they started talking about the situation. And I'm assuming Bones said something to the realm of, hey, it wasn't that big of a deal. Calm down.
Also, I would have liked a little more. I mean, I would have liked some opinions on Cantlay's hat situation. Because all we got was
plenty of them.
Yeah, we just got people explaining the situation.
Sure.
No one was like, I think Cantlay is full of shit. I think he's not wearing the hat to protest. Or, yeah, he's probably telling the truth about the hat not fitting. No one shared their opinion. They just kept explaining the situation. Like, I get the situation.
Yeah.
You don't need to keep telling me that he's... Yeah.
But also, like, he's got to be smart enough to know that, like, you don't need to get paid to play in the Ryder Cup. It's like... That's just, like, it's you're doing it for your country. It's USA versus Europe. I mean, what do you need? You need an extra couple million dollars. You already probably got fucking 40 in the bank.
Well, in a way, it is the like Olympics of golf, yeah, right? Because
besides the golfing that they do at the Olympics.
Besides that, yes. The Ryder Cup is the more important.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I don't know. I just think it's like, smarter to think like, okay, why? Like, that's just how it's always been.
Yeah. And Olympic athletes had been going without pay for.
Cantlay's a shithead, but I kind of like him now. I'm coming around on Cantlay.
I wish I could hear him talk more. He just doesn't, I don't feel like I ever hear him talking.
So, like, yeah. Everyone, like, I shit on him real hard for the pace of play stuff.
You did.
Yep.
And as you should have. Watching Full Swing kind of made me like Cantlay because he just doesn't give a shit. I think he's doing shit on purpose to stir people up. And it's kind of fun to watch.
I mean, he's got to be with the whole hat.
I mean, it worked for me. He got me fired up. And I don't give a shit about Patrick Cantlay. And now I do.
The U.S., they were the villains.
For sure.
Ryder Cup.
Yeah.
The Cantlay and then like Justin Thomas in to combat the whole situation, didn't wear a hat. And then the whole waving the hats on the green and like chirping the crowd, like all this kind of stuff was... They were for sure the villains. And it's kind of like the dream team. Was it the 89 Olympic team?
Sure. Yeah. Whatever the dream team was.
The Olympic basketball team. Can you look up that year? Yep. It's going to bug me. But I mean, the 92? U.S. 92. The U.S. clearly had the better team statistically and got pumped.
Yeah.
But again, home turf, all that. They haven't won in Europe for, what, 30 years?
30 years. The drought continues.
So I think the next one's at Bethpage Black in New York.
New York, yeah.
And then it goes back to somewhere in Europe, and then it is at home at Hazeltine, Minneapolis.
I know. We're going to have to try and get that
4 years.
Yeah.
6 years from now.
That's going to be sweet.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, I'm with you guys on your take of it.
Season one, better.
I just, again, I don't read into it enough to have those opinions until they're laid out for me. I'm like, okay, well, that kind of makes sense. I get caught up in the moment of like, fuck this. Like that season was great. I thought it was great overall because I don't look into it enough into the finer details of like the old, not getting the over explanation that you want or anything
and
like that.
Am I overall satisfied with the season? Yeah. I would love for there to be a season three of Full Swing. Yeah, absolutely.
I'm not going to say I didn't enjoy it.
Yeah.
So this is the best way I can describe it. Season one was a steak dinner with garlic, mashed potatoes, and asparagus. Season two was a steak dinner with a steak.
Yeah.
And maybe some ketchup on the side.
No. Yeah. It was just, I didn't get any of those extras that season one gave us. So I felt myself wanting more.
Yeah. And it's not that me and Tyler are being, I don't know, nitpicky about it, but we just know that there was way more potential in this thing that was left untouched. So,
yeah. Sorry. With all this caddy talk, would you guys watch one event per year where the caddies are playing in the tournament? And like, yes, it can be the players caddying for the caddies. Or the caddies can just have their own caddy. But I think just to see the skill set of these caddies and how they actually do perform, like Gino is a pretty fucking good golfer. I know he played, I can't remember what course it was after what tournament, but he played the course after the tournament was over last year and he shot like an 85, I think.
Wow.
Why can't I think of the name of the father-son or the family tournament?
PNC?
PNC. Yeah. I would watch a PNC type tournament where it's the player and caddy.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say.
That would be sweet.
Well, because
I don't think I would. I wouldn't watch a caddies only. Yeah,
because I feel like caddies now are starting to get their own personalities a little bit.
I just don't know enough of them. I know like four caddies.
Yeah,
you know.
Yep.
So I couldn't get interested in watching just these caddies playing. It'd be like watching, I don't know, a Corn Ferry tour where I don't know anybody.
Sure.
You know?
But if the player's with them, then you definitely recognize them.
Yep. And they can play together. Like maybe they hire a third person to be their caddy for the day, or they just carry their own clubs, or they get a cart. I don't know.
That would be fucking sweet.
Yeah, that would.
Just random thought.
Yeah. I mean, the most popular group would be Gino and Joel for sure.
Yeah. Talk about, I mean, vibes guys too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I would
in a match setting, like that would be just killer.
Yep.
Or like, I mean, they could just do it at a practice round before a big tournament. They always have the Thursday or the practice round beforehand. Like Why not just have the practice round be caddies play too?
It would be kind of fun if like the Masters does the par three tournament or the par three tournament before the Masters starts. If they did a caddy golfer match play tournament or best ball tournament or something.
Yeah. I'd do it like the Valero too. You could do like a,
just do the copy two, the Valero. Just make it players and caddies.
Two person match play, bracket style. Bracket styles get anyone hard.
Mm-hmm. Especially me.
Yeah. I mean, NCAA, like you could know nothing about basketball and you're filling a bracket out.
Yep.
Yeah. So we'll take the most boring tournament out there of the year, the Valspar or some shit like that.
Yeah. Whatever. Yeah.
Yeah. And then, we'll just do that. Switch that around.
That'd be sweet. I'd watch it. We need to resort more to that than the match.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. The match is getting overplayed.
Match is played out.
It's got to be something different.
Yeah. Yep. All right. Let's take a break.
Quick break. We're gonna come back with I'm gonna give you guys a little history lesson in this next segment. And I don't think you're ready for it because I've learned a lot. I'll leave it at that. All right, guys. Like I said before the break, I got a little history lesson for Tyler, Jake.
We are history buffs. You do.
I know. I am too. Yep. What's the word I'm trying to think of? Declared secondary education history teacher major.
That's you.
First semester. Actually, the first semester of the first semester at college. So half the first semester.
Yeah. I'm a declared history enjoyer. I just let you know that. Yeah.
I actually quit teaching school to be a history teacher. I was fully in
quit teaching school?
Yeah. I was at full education degree. Oh, I was going to emphasis in history and did a practicum and hated every second of it. So I quit.
I didn't think that they would rent the TV on the TV stand out to me as many days as I would want it.
You can only watch 300 so many times.
Yeah, let alone have to get up in front of a class and speak 5 days a week.
Yeah, to shitheads that don't want to be there.
I could not. I can lock myself in my office now and not have to talk to anybody if I want to.
Yeah.
Much better.
Mm-hmm.
But I give props to the teachers out there because the fact that you guys can do that is very impressive. All right, so we're going to go through... 1, 2, 3. We're going through 6 golf term meanings and the origins of each of them.
Yes.
A little etymology.
And this was originally just going to be a history lesson, but us being the over competitive humans that we are, I've turned it into a game of Jake versus me history golf edition. Okay.
We'll see how close you guys can get. Because again, some of these go deep.
Okay. So Jake, rock, paper, scissors, because we're not going to do a buzzer situation on shoot. For who gets to answer the first question first, and then we'll alternate from there. And if the first person gets it wrong, they have a chance to steal.
Okay. All right. Ready? On shoot. Ready?
Yep.
Ready? Rock, paper, scissors, shoot. Gotcha.
Jake's got
paper
the first one.
Paper to scissors. Jake
wins. I got scissors?
Yes.
Okay. We're going to start off with the overarching explanation of why are there 18 holes on a golf course?
Okay. I think I know this one. My guess is because... in like Scotland or something like that, wherever golf was invented, Scotland, that there were 18 shots in a bottle of whiskey. And then you were supposed to take 18 drinks throughout 18 holes. Am I correct on that?
Can I try a steal for a more accurate answer?
Okay.
There are 18 shots in a bottle of scotch.
Well, scotch whiskey, Tyler.
Okay. And let me preface all this by these explanations are coming from the USGA website.
Okay.
So I have to take it for what it is. I've heard those explanations before.
Shit, we're wrong.
Oh, man.
You're both wrong. It doesn't, it has nothing to do with whiskey.
Okay.
Which I thought it was cooler that it originated with the whiskey thing.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to keep thinking that. However, my mind has now switched. Okay, why are there 18 holes in golf? The links at St. Andrews occupy a narrow strip of land along the sea. As early as the 15th century, golfers at St. Andrews established a customary route through the undulating terrain, playing to holes whose locations were dictated by topography. The course that emerged featured 11 holes laid out end-to-end from the clubhouse to the far end of the property. One of the players played the holes out, turned around and played the holes in for a total of 22 holes. In 1764, several of the holes were deemed too short and were therefore combined. The number was thereby reduced from 11 to 9 so that a complete round of the links comprised 18 holes.
Interesting.
So I'm assuming there's 11 holes and you know, shorter par threes, more par threes than there should have been. So they said, all right, condense these into par fours or par fives, shrink it down by two holes. And that's how the 18 holes was originated at St. Andrews.
Interesting. Also, you have a flag from St. Andrews 18 right behind you, signed by John Daly.
Yep.
Yeah, it could have been St. Andrews 22. Yeah. Had this not been implemented.
That's true. Yeah. we could have been saying, hey, I'll meet you at the 23rd hole.
Okay, yeah. So this might be a stupid question, and I probably know this. Is St. Andrews the first course ever?
Yeah, I think, well, not maybe not the first course ever, but it's definitely the oldest.
I know it's the oldest course, but is it the first one ever made?
That I do not know.
Good thing I have a computer right here.
St. Andrews is in Scotland, correct?
Yep.
Okay. Because I know they have the Scottish Open, and then the next weekend they have the Open.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't know. Okay, that makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, that's it. It is the first and oldest golf course in the world. Obviously, wow. I'm sure it's changed ever since. It's changed a shitload.
I guess I knew it was really old. I just didn't think it was the first golf course ever.
Yeah, and 1764 is when it was changed from the 22 holes to 18 holes. 1764 was before we declared independence.
Yeah.
That's a long fucking... In the grand scheme, it's not that long ago.
Yep.
But in our lifetime, that is a long time. That is a long time. Very long time.
Extremely.
250...
It's the oldest, 250
years
oldest old? Modern sport, I suppose.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was established in... Well, officially the area was established in 1552, right? Yeah. Holy shit.
Cool. Okay.
Fun fact.
Probably not what you guys thought.
No. I think
I like the 18 shots of whiskey thing.
That's way cooler.
Better.
Yeah. Let's rewrite the history books. What okay.
Yeah. Right. Let's okay. just submit that to USGA. It's a Wikipedia.
I'm sure if we get enough signatures, in which I'm sure there would be a lot of Scotch drinkers out there that would sign, especially ones that like to golf. Signatures go a long way in today's world.
They do. They do.
God, get anything on a ballot.
That the actual answer is so much more boring than the Scotch.
Big time.
Yeah.
It's like, why did they say this needs to be shrunk down into more? Like why did you have to combine?
They got too good holes? And they're like, we need to challenge ourselves more, make the holes longer.
Yeah. Be interested to see like what the clubs look like.
Well, we're still arguing over the same thing these days, trying to elongate the hole.
Yeah.
True.
That's true. Okay. 18 holes in golf. There you go. All right. Let's do what is the origin of the popular golf game called skins?
The origin of skins. Well, it was two buddies. They were hanging out. One of them was a hack, but he could pull a good hole out of his ass every once in a while, and he wanted a way to compete with his better golfing friend. Did I nail that?
Or is it the origin of the term? I'm going to guess the origin of the term comes from the phrase, no skin off my back.
So, that's actually a good answer. So. Neither are correct.
Damn it.
And this doesn't really give an overarching like answer, really. Just kind of like where the term is derived from. But as a format of golf gambling, skins has been around for decades, but really only became popular after the creation of the skins game in the 1980s. In other parts of the country, skins is also known as cats, scats with a C, scats with a K, or syndicates. Of these, syndicates seem to be the oldest term, going back to at least the 1950s and possibly earlier. It has been suggested that skins, scats, etc., are simply shortened, simplified versions of the term syndicates.
How do you get skins out of syndicates?
I don't know.
Skindicates?
But I wanted to know, like, why, okay, what, like, why they, like, who invented the game skins, or
yeah, and why did they invent
it? His name was Johnny Skins.
Yeah, fucking, yeah, the Sinister's father.
Yeah.
Johnny Skins would be it'd be a great
syndicate.
That'd be a great alter ego.
It just makes no sense. Like the game should just be called points, to be completely honest.
It really should. I mean, yeah. It's overcomplicated. And a lot of these terms are kind of overcomplicated. Like why they named it that, I don't know.
Like, okay, match play should be called points.
Yes.
And then you could have, I don't know what you, maybe you just call it skins. I don't know.
No, I'm with you.
Match play doesn't make sense. Just call it points.
Well, match play makes sense because you follow the same thing as tennis match. So like you would play until, right? Like I win a hole, you win a hole is the same thing as winning like a singular game of tennis. And then you play a tennis match, which is like five different games. And then you win and or you play until you have X amount of games won.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's but every where that hole is worth from, a point. It should just be called points.
That's true.
Well, and for someone to adopt a name like that and then for it to spread across the entire golf world.
And go from syndicate to skins?
Like why? Like how? I mean, it was derived back in the 1980s, like 1950s, 1980s, whatever.
Yeah.
That I mean, that's not that long ago.
No.
So how do you come up with
1950s syndicate? It could have been maybe the mob started.
Gang related is yeah what I'm thinking.
Yeah. But for that, it's kind of like I don't know, like the fucking like fake packing a chew can with your fingers. Like that's some person did that for the first time and it spread across every middle school in the entire world.
Yeah, or the Stussy S.
Yes.
With the three lines. Yeah.
To me, that's insane how shit can spread so fast and so far.
You would have enjoyed anthropology.
Fuck.
That was a class I had to take when I was going to be a teacher.
History teacher. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Skins. There you go. Okay. Now we'll go. I mean, very, very common golf terms. How did the terms birdie and eagle come into golf?
You got honors, Jake.
Birdie and eagle. I am going to say because the ball flies in the air and so do birds.
Wrong.
Okay.
That's a good guess.
But it's a good guess. I mean, yeah, it's right in line.
It's
like what happened for this to originate?
Yeah, I don't know.
You won't get it because they were using terms back then that we don't use now.
They were saying,
well, I know why eagle is better than birdie. They just go by size of bird.
Yeah, but then albatross.
Albatrosses are huge.
So are eagles.
Yeah.
I would say that albatrosses are smaller than eagles. I watched Adventures in Golf, the Hawaii one that just came out, and they were trying to find an albatross like on the course by the water. And I want to say eagles are probably bigger.
No, they're definitely bigger. You might be thinking about pelican. Pelicans are a big
the wingspan.
I'm not thinking of pelican. No.
The wingspan of the large great albatross are the largest of any bird.
Okay, wingspan.
Wow.
11-foot wingspan.
That's crazy.
Dang. 11.2, 11.6.
Let me give you.
There's a smaller breed of albatross, the Laysan albatross, whose wingspan is only 6.5 feet, but that's still pretty big.
That is pretty big.
Okay, let me give you the breakdown. Okay, how did the terms birdie and eagle come into golf? The term birdie originated in the U.S. in 1899. H.B. Martin's 50 Years of American Golf contains an account of a foursomes match played at the Atlantic City Country Club. One of the players, A.B. Smith, relates, my ball came to rest within 6 inches of the cup. I said, that was a bird of a shot. I suggest that when one of us plays a hole in one under par, he receives double compensation. The other two agreed, and we began right away. Just as soon as the next one came, to call it a birdie. In 19th century American slang, bird referred to anyone or anything excellent or wonderful. Now, by analogy with birdie, the term eagle soon thereafter became common to refer to a score one better than a bird. Also, by analogy, the term albatross became common to refer to a double eagle.
So you named your dog because some dudes
had a
bird of a shot.
Bird of a shot.
That was a bird of a shot. I suggest that when one of us plays a hole in one under par, he receives double compensation.
I shall name my dog this.
I shall name my dog this 124 years later. Yeah. So, yeah.
We should have been doing Scottish accents.
That was a bird of a shot.
That was a bird.
Yeah, we're 6 inches from the cup. That's a hell. I mean, that is a hell of a shot.
We're going 0 for here, Jake.
Yeah,
sure.
We are. Yeah, absolutely.
You guys for sure.
Got nothing.
Okay, you're not going to get this one either. What is the origin of the word bogey?
Jake, you're first.
Okay, I absolutely have this one.
I do have a guess.
Because a bird is something great, and birds fly, right? Something that's bad that flies is an enemy plane, which is also called a bogey. And so that's a bogey of a shot is the opposite of a, that's a bird of a shot. So there you go. That's okay. My brain.
My guess. I know this from Harry Potter. Hogwarts is in Scotland and they call boogers bogeys. And if you go over par, it's like a booger of a shot instead of a bird of a shot.
That, I mean, okay, I can get on board with that.
Is it right?
I don't think you're not exactly right.
Even if Tyler gets a half a point, that's winning.
But you're close. I'll say you're close, Tyler. Okay, so a little bit longer of a paragraph, but I think there's good context in all of it. The term bogey comes from a song that was popular in the British Isles in the early 1890s called The Bogeyman. B-O-G-E-Y. I don't think it's called The Boogeyman.
Okay.
Later known as the Colonial... The Colonel... C-O-L-O-N-E-L.
Colonel.
The Colonel Boogie March. The character of the song was an elusive figure who hid in the shadows. I'm the bogeyman. Catch me if you can. That which makes me thinks it's boogeyman.
Yeah, they could just call it something different.
Okay, golfers in Scotland and England equated the quest for the elusive bogeyman with the quest for the elusive perfect score. By the mid to late 1890s, the term bogey score referred to the ideal score a good player could be expected to make on a hole under perfect conditions. It also came to be used to describe stroke play tournaments. Hence, in early rule books, we find a section detailing the regulations for bogey competitions. It was only in the late 1900s/early 1910s that the concept of par started to emerge. This being the designated number of strokes a scratch player, not a good player, as was with bogey, but a scratch player could be expected to take on a hole in ideal conditions. In this way, par was distinguished from bogey, and the term par itself is a standard term in sports handicapping where it simply means level or even.
Hell yeah.
And I just did a little more research and Tyler's halfway right.
Yeah.
Bogeyman became boogerman in the United States because of European immigrants.
So are we
and that's the same
boogies or bogeys?
It's both. It's a boogie.
Did Harry Potter just help me get half a point in a golf?
Like
trivia?
I said, you were close. I mean, obviously,
you're the judge. Yeah. You have to award points.
The bogeyman called the booger man, booger being an American English equivalent of the British English bogey. So there you go, Tyler. I'll give you half a point for that.
Thanks, Harry and Ron.
Yeah, I'll give you half.
They got troll bogeys on his wand.
That, I mean, shout outs to you because that's not an easy. It's not easy to decipher that one.
I mean, thank you. Besides that, the biggest thing I took away from that is that bogey golf is good golfers.
Yes.
In the official golf history, bogey golfers are good.
And that's why it had distinguished good golfers playing the bogey under ideal conditions versus the scratch golfers playing where then par was originated under ideal conditions.
So to all of you hardos out there that think being scratch is just good, you're wrong. Shooting 90 is good.
Moving the golf
being scratch is great.
Being scratch is great. Yeah.
Yeah. So,
but if you're trying to just be a good golfer, all you got to do is shoot 90.
Kind of interesting.
Very.
I always wondered where the term bogey came from. There it is.
Then I wonder why we call enemy planes bogeys. You know, then I wonder why that came about. Yeah, like bogeys inbound, Top Gun, yep. Right? Don't they call them bogeys in Top Gun, too? Mm-hmm.
All right, last one, and then we'll wrap it up. Mulligan. Where did the term mulligan originate from?
Okay, I'm first. I'm going to just guess.
Now, okay, before you go into it, there are three different, like, story accounts as to where this originated. No one for sure knows which one it is.
Okay. So my best guess is going to be there was some guy whose last name was Mulligan that did the first mulligan.
That's correct.
Okay. My guess is if you get to do a shot over, you get to do it again, and you get to mull over the shot again. So you get to figure it out.
You get to mull again.
Yeah, you get to mull again. Yeah, you get to mull it over again.
Yeah, I mean that's
a way more creative answer.
No, that's kind of right. That's kind of right. And you guys are going to be we'll go 1, 2, 3. Story number 3. You'll love it.
Okay.
Okay, the story most widely accepted for the origin of the term bogey focuses on a gentleman named David Mulligan, who played at the St. Lambert Country Club in Montreal, Canada during the 1920s. There are several versions of the David Mulligan story. This is story number 1.
Davey.
Mr. Mulligan was a hotelier in the first half of the century, a part owner and manager of the Biltmore Hotel in New York City, as well as several large Canadian hotels. One story says that the first Mulligan was an impulsive sort of event, that one day Mulligan hit a very long drive off the first tee, just not straight, and acting on impulse, re-teed and hit again. His partners found it all amusing and decided that the shot Mulligan, that the shot that Mulligan himself called a correction shot, deserved a better name, so they called it a Mulligan.
Okay.
Good.
Okay. Story number 2. Mulligan played, and this all still has to deal with David Mulligan. Mulligan played regularly with a group of friends at St. Lambert, and in the morning he drove to pick up his golfing buddies. The road into the club was reportedly bumpy and windy and just sort of generally poor, with bridge and bumpy railroad ties. An extra shot was allocated to Mulligan, the driver of the car, on the first tee, because he was jumpy and shaking from the difficult drive. So like, hey, re-tee and hit another one. That drive had to have you in fucking shambles once that was over. So
that was the first ever breakfast ball. First tee.
That's true.
Just wait. I think that story's kind of dumb. You can't get that shaken up by just driving down. I mean,
old cars are pretty rickety.
And
but
Canada is known for having some very shitty gravel roads, or just roads in general.
Yeah, but.
Okay. Story number 3. Boys, this is a good one. This story again identified a specific moment, citing a day when David Mulligan showed up late to the course, having scrambled to get out of bed late and get dressed and get on the course on time. He was frazzled on the first tee, hit a poor shot, and re-teed.
That's the first ever breakfast ball.
That right there is the origination of the breakfast ball.
So his name's David Mulligan, sir. I tip my cap to you.
Hats off to Davey.
Do you think David was sitting there on the first tee hitting that second shot thinking, one day in the future, people will be able to record their voices and put it out on this thing that the whole world can consume, and they'll name their show
And no one will even know where the breakfast ball originated from back in the early 1900s until now.
There needs to be something that we can accidentally invent on the course.
I know. I will say that points game, based off the par of the hole, that's how much you bet. I think that's a phenomenal game.
Yeah. I don't remember it.
Did we ever come up with a name for it?
So you take the yardage of a hole, and you call it decimal points.
Oh, yeah.
And you put a decimal anywhere in, like, say it's a 452-yard par 4. You can put the decimal point after the 4, so that's $4.52 that you're playing for on that hole. You can put it after the 5, $45.20 you're playing, or you can play for $452 on that hole. I believe we came up with that game.
I think when we posted it, everyone was like, this game exists.
Fuck. Okay. So yeah, that's
but we just didn't come up with a cool enough name for it. Clearly, we got to come up with something like Syndicate so that we get,
some old school bullshit name.
Oh, no. I haven't seen anyone.
Yeah.
People would put a bunch of name suggestions.
So yeah, David Mulligan. There's 3 different story accounts of where that term originated. I'm going to go with the third one. Woke up late, scrambled to get out of bed, get to the first tee, wasn't warmed up, hit a shitty shot. Let's re-tee a breakfast ball.
So
let's hit again and have ourselves a day.
If we take all 3 of those, I was right.
Mm-hmm.
Because all 3 of those is just a guy named Mulligan.
Mm-hmm.
Let's go, dude.
Yeah. Nice, Tyler.
Clean sweep. 1.5 points.
Nice.
We would have never gotten the rest of those. Never in a million years.
But it's kind of a nice little history lesson for you all, especially for the listener. I mean, I had no idea that if you would ask me these questions, 0 for 5, 0 for 6, however many there were.
You would have guessed one.
I maybe got lucky.
So you guys whip that out on the course next time you're trying to impress somebody. Next time you're doing business on the links.
Yeah, you go on golfing with your boss. Say, hey, you know, first mulligan derived from my boy Davey.
Yeah, except don't do the actual reason golf is 18 holes. Do this bottle of whiskey thing. That's way cooler. Better.
Way cooler.
We'll make sure that spreads like wildfire.
Yeah.
Okay, I got to go.
Okay.
That's it for the episode.
Yeah.
Hope you enjoyed the history lesson. Be back next week. Love you all.
Love you.
Hey, pipe that the wrong way.
I'll call the clubhouse. We'll book in another 18 for tomorrow.
Okay, they cheated on that. They fluffed their balls.
Yeah, no better time for the breakfast ball than now.